Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wiefald. It's 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008. The commission is meeting today for its regularly scheduled meeting in the commission hearing room, State Capitol, 12th floor, here in Bismarck. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald. Joining me today by telephone is Commissioner Tony Clark. Tony, do you have any opening comments you'd like to make?
Good morning and welcome.
And then also with me today is Commissioner Kevin Kramer. Kevin?
Good morning. Welcome. I move a passage of items on the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I can't get any closer.
We'll go to SW1. I move the commission issue an intent to award a contract to Gray Tech Company Limited in the amount of $1,160,963.04 for construction services at the Columbus Phase 9 Abandoned Mine Land Project.
Second.
I was impressed by the detail of that bid with 4 cents in there, just to be sure.
I thought it was high by about 2 cents. I'm willing to overlook it this time.
This is an intent to award because we received about 9 bids for this particular project at Columbus Phase 9, the Abandoned Mine Land Project. That means the highest bid we received was over $2 million, and the staff estimate for this project was about $1,800,000. So this bid came in quite a bit under what the staff estimated. The construction work will involve the elimination of dangerous high walls and other grading at an abandoned service mine southwest of Columbus. An intent to award a contract needs to be issued with the opportunity for other bidders to appeal the award of a contract to the low bidder. And this means that if we don't receive any of those appeals, that the commission would issue the contract then at a award the contract at a future meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW2. I move the commission issue an intent to award and award a contract to Material Testing Services, LLC, in the amount of $27,040 for material testing at the Williams County Road 9 Phase 3 Abandoned Mineland Project.
Second.
Now, you'll notice there's a difference in wording here. In this one, we are issuing an intent to award and awarding the contract. And that is because in this particular situation, we only had one bidder on this particular project. The bid came from Material Testing Services of Minot. The staff estimate was $27,000. The bid came in for $27,040, so very close to what we had estimated. Everything seems to be in order. This particular contractor was bidding on material testing on the grout mixtures that will be injected into abandoned underground mine working and related engineering services for this project near Williston.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
SW3, I move the commission issue an intent to award and award a contract to BNC Concrete Pumping, Inc. in the amount of $628,577.50 for drilling and grouting at the Williams County Road 9 Phase 3 Abandoned Mine Land Project.
Second.
This is, again, not only the intent to award but awarding of the contract because, again, we only had one bidder on this particular portion of the contract. The bid came in from BNC Concrete Pumping, formerly Theme Drilling of Williston, North Dakota. The staff estimate for this project was $578,050, so this bid came in about $50,000 above what the staff had estimated. The project involves drilling and the injection of grout into abandoned underground mine workings along Williams County Road 9 and other public roads and in the Grandview subdivision east of Williston.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 SW4, I move the commission adopt the order denying intervention in Minkota Power Cooperative Inc.'s application to site a Pillsbury to Fargo 230 kV electric transmission line in Barnes, Cass, and possibly Steele counties of North Dakota, case number PU0848. Now, the commission looked very carefully at this. When we have an application to intervene in a case, this is the case for the 230 kV electric transmission line that's being constructed approximately 60 miles in eastern North Dakota. We look carefully at it. In this case, the commission is, if this passes today, would be denying the intervention request. The intervention request came from, on April 9th, RES Americas and Peak Wind Development. They filed a petition to intervene in this proceeding. The petitioners request that the commission grant their intervention and allow them an opportunity to serve Otter Tail and Minn Kota with formal discovery requests. The petitioners state that they plan to jointly develop a wind farm on property owned by Peak Wind members, and that on October 16th of 2007, they filed with the Midwest ISO, MISO, a request to interconnect to the interstate transmission grid at Otter Tail's Buffalo substation located in Cass County in North Dakota. They say that their proposed transmission line would originate approximately 500 yards away from the Peak Wind property in Barnes County and would be located within close proximity to Peak Wind's requested location of interconnection in Otter Tail's transmission system. They said that they thought that Otter Tail needed to file a PCNN with the commission and that the commission should hold hearings on a PCNN. They also said that the proposed transmission line is not included in either Otter Tail Power's or Minn Kota's 10-year plans. And they asked, the petitioners urged the commission to require updated 10-year plans be filed before the commission acts on this application. Then Minn Kota responded, and they said that, as you note, Otter Tail withdrew as an applicant, and we did that the other day at a special meeting on Monday. And so now Minn Kota is completely in charge of this particular project. So Minn Kota was the one that filed their objection to the petition for intervention. They objected to the petitioner's intervention for the request that they said that petitioners presented no valid basis for intervening in the proceeding. They said that the interconnection issues that have been raised by the petitioner are properly addressed to the MISO or the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. They also said that the intervention would result in a delay. They also said, among other things, that they had failed to satisfy the requirements of what's requiring to in a petition to intervene. Now, the commission considered all of these arguments in making its determination. Basically, we're finding today that the petitioners have failed to satisfy the first requirement of law in 6902-2005 because they failed to state a substantial interest in the proceeding. The interest that they seek to protect is the right to interconnect to the transmission line. An interconnection is not an issue that can be addressed in a siting application under Chapter 4922. Their question about that there needs to be a PCNN hearing held by Otter Tail no longer is applicable because Otter Tail is no longer going to be an owner of the line. And the question about the petitioner's argument concerning the applicant's failure to update 10-year plans to include the proposed transmission line does not constitute grounds for granting the intervention. The 10-year plans are filed annually with the most recent information available. There is no requirement for updating between annual filings. The petitioners also stated in their petition, that they are not opposed to the construction and the siting of the proposed transmission line, and that's what this case is all about. We find that the petitioner's request fails to set forth any grounds for intervention and would likely unduly broaden the issues or delay the proceedings. And so, therefore, with this order, the petition orders that the request for intervention be denied. Everything seems to be in order at this time. Any further comments from my fellow commissioners?
Well, I would just say, I mean, the key here really is what the law allows, and it's very clear that the law itself, the siting law, just deals with cultural resources, historic resources, environmental resources. It really is with regard to the impact of the infrastructure on the land and land use, and while there may be very valid concerns and issues to be raised at some point in some proceeding and in some venue that the folks who are seeking to intervene have, our state law just simply does not allow those types of issues to be raised in this type of proceeding.
Once ownership of the transmission line became solely a Minn Kota Power, who is not required to file for a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and so therefore the PCNN went away, it seems that if there was an appropriate venue for intervention on these grounds, it would have been the PCNN. So once the PCNN went away, it seems that their opportunity to intervene also did. And Tony's articulated exactly right with regard to a siting permit.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. SW5. This is for discussion only. The commission is announcing the fuel cost adjustment for Northern States Power Company for the month of April. As a result of the change, the electric bill for the typical NSP residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours will increase by $1.49 for bills rendered in the month of April. The actual cost of the actual fuel cost adjustment for April is 1.676 cents per kilowatt hour. It's staying right around in the same range it's been for the last 4 or 5 months. SW6. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Langdon Wind LLC for partial transfer of certificate of site compatibility number 6 to Otter Tail Corporation for its ownership of a 40.5 megawatt portion of the Langdon Wind Energy Center in Cavalier County, North Dakota. Case number PU08159.
Second.
I needed to read this carefully myself in order to figure out what was going on here. This is what is going on here. On May 31st, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility to Langdon Wind, authorizing construction of 159 megawatts of Langdon Wind Energy Center in Cavalier County, North Dakota. All right. And then, as the commission found in a finding of fact number 13 in its decision approving issuance of the certificate, Otter Tail then had an option to own 40.5 megawatt portion of this wind farm. Otter Tail exercised its ownership option and was issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity in November of 2007. Now, what we're doing here today is originally Langdon Wind had 159 megawatts of wind in its certificate of site compatibility. However, they need now to transfer 40.5 of that to Otter Tail because Otter Tail now owns 40.5 of that ownership option, as we said. And that's what's happening in this case. And so at that time, Otter Tail, Langdon Wind, if this happens, will then have 118.5 megawatts in its certificate of site compatibility on that particular project. However, you have to remember that then we're going to be adding another 40 that's before us in near future that Otter Tail wishes to add to, that's before the commission at this time, that Otter Tail wishes to add. So that's what's happening. We're transferring 40.5 from Langdon Wind to Otter Tail in this particular case. This is a notice of opportunity for hearing so that people have a chance to comment on this if they wish and to let us know their feelings about this. And if they do not, if comments and requests for hearing must be received by June 2nd, and if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine this matter without a hearing. This is more of a procedural matter than anything substantive.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio. Next, we'll go to Commissioner Kramer.
I have three cost of gas adjustment announcements. Great Plains is increasing its cost of gas charge by 5.42 cents per MCF. Cost of gas charge will be applied to bills issued in April. Cost of gas in the customer bill will change from 11.58 per MCF to 11.63 per MCF and will affect a typical April customer by increasing the cost of gas in the bill by about 40 cents compared to last month and about 20 cents compared to last year. MDU is increasing its cost of gas charge by 42.4 cents per decatherm, and this will be applied for May customers, changing the cost of gas charge from 8.85 per decatherm to 9.28 per decatherm. For a typical May customer, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $2.12 higher than last month and about $18.90 higher than May of last year. In both cases, the cost of gas has gone up, and the commodity cost of gas has gone up, largely, of course, due to pressures, upward pressures with oil prices, oil increases. And it's been, frankly, a little colder spring than normal as well, so that hasn't helped. And then finally, MDU is decreasing its propane cost of gas charge by 88.2 cents per dekatherm. The cost of gas charge will change from $17.74 to $16.86 per dekatherm, and it will be applied to propane gas bills in May. For a typical residential customer, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $4.41 lower than last month, but remains $31.27 higher than May of last year. KC2, I move the commission submit the 2009 administration and enforcement grant application to the Office of Surface Mining for funding the coal mining regulatory program from July 1, 2008 to June 30th of 2009.
Second.
This is, of course, the time of year when the grant application for federal funds for the Reclamation Division needs to go in for funding the next fiscal year, which begins in July 1st of this year. Total amount of the grant application, including the state's share, is $991,648. Of that total, the federal share is $644,571. And so we continue, of course, the federal-state funding split at 65-35 based on OSM's federal lands funding formula. I think I'll just stop talking for a little bit. Everything's in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And next, that ends the items in your portfolio,
it does.
Commissioner Kramer. Yes. And then, Commissioner Clark, since you're participating by phone, would you like me to read the motions, or are you
I've got them in front of me.
You have them in front of you. Great. Go right ahead.
One, I move the commission.
A little louder if you can, Tony.
Sure. I move the commission adopt the order approving an amendment negotiated to an existing interconnection agreement between Midtown and Communications and Consolidated Telecom, case number EU0884.
Second.
This is really the only thing that this particular amendment to the interconnection agreement does is it adds the Hettinger, I believe it's Hettinger, I'm looking
yep.
for Yeah,
yep.
the Hettinger North Dakota Exchange to the existing interconnection agreement that exists between Midcontinent and Consolidated Telecom. It'll allow Midcontinent to provide telecom services in the Hettinger Exchange. In this case, the parties wished us to go ahead and act on it after a notice was submitted so that we affirmatively approve it. It gets done a little bit quicker as opposed to just allowing the interconnection agreement to be approved by virtue of time limit in law.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08158 granting the request of Farmers Elevator Company of Martin to discontinue business at Martin, North Dakota.
Second.
There's an accompanying motion that we'll make in just a moment here. What this is, the Farmers Elevator of Martin was sold to Farmers Union Oil Company of Velva, and all of the outstanding obligations have been assumed by the Velva company, so we'll be approving theirs in the next motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08150 granting the request of Farmers Union Oil Company of Velva to operate a 379,000 bushel grain warehouse at Martin, North Dakota.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And TC4. I move the commission acknowledge its comments concerning the Federal Communications Commission's proposed rulemakings on Universal Service Fund reform, the identical support rule, and the use of reverse auctions, case number PU08160.
Second.
The,
actually, we don't need to second this. This has already been, or are we acknowledging them? We do need to vote
yes.
on this. Okay, second.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. First, I should ask, are there any media there for the typical
yes.
comments?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Dave Thompson's here.
Okay, I'll just make a few comments on this. The comments themselves should be laid out on the table in front of you. Basically, what this is a very major rulemaking that the FCC is undergoing and undertaking, and it deals with the Federal Universal Service Fund, which is really a key fund for the state of North Dakota. What it does is it supports telecommunications service in high-cost areas, amongst other things, and North Dakota is certainly a high-cost area by any measure. Basically, what the comments do is first indicate the importance of the Universal Service Fund in North Dakota. We are a very rural state. Over 40% of our traditional wireline customers are served by small rural carriers that serve collectively about 96% of the geography of the state itself, and we just don't have the types of very large concentration urban areas to offset those high-cost areas. So it's very important for wireline companies. On the cellular side, on the wireless space, it's also very important. Federal Universal Service Funding now for a number of years has played a key role in ensuring that we have the ability to roll out wireless services into some high-cost areas that probably would not otherwise get it. The fund itself has come under a number of pressures because of new technologies, new competition in the marketplace, and what's happened is that the fund has grown quite a bit in size. So the FCC is very concerned about this. They're concerned about both the funding mechanism for it and how the money is spent out of it. These proceedings deal specifically with how the money is spent out of it. Basically, we focus in on three parts of these proceedings and offer comments on those with a number of subpoints. But the first thing that we discuss is something called the identical support rule. Under existing FCC rule, the way that it works is every carrier that's receiving money in an area gets reimbursed at the incumbent traditional wireline company's cost. And the system doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. It's causing a lot of upward pressure on the fund because different companies have different costs to serve. And so what we argue and what the FCC has also tentatively concluded is that carriers that are certified to receive federal money should be supported based on their own costs, not all on the incumbent wireline company's costs. The second major issue that we speak to is the reverse auction idea. Basically, what has been forwarded at the FCC is an idea that for geographic areas, universal service should be auctioned off, and whoever makes the low bid, sort of like we just did with our AML bids, would get to serve that area. Now, while auctions have good uses in a lot of cases, we conclude that in this particular instance, when you're talking about telecommunication service, for a number of reasons, auctions really make no sense at all. It could be a race to the bottom for service quality and a whole number of other measures. And so while perhaps in some very discrete areas there may be some ability to use auctions, for the most part we don't see that as a viable way to fund telecommunication services. And then the final set of comments that we speak to is called the Joint Board Recommended Decision. It's a recommendation that was forwarded by state and federal regulators to really overhaul the framework for how universal service itself is distributed. What it would do is it would break the fund into three distinct categories. One would be what they call a provider of last resort category. It's basically the traditional wireline phone companies. The second would be a fund that's specifically set aside to fund mobility services, in other words, cellular wireless services. And then the third is a fund which would specifically fund broadband initiatives. And we found that there's a lot of merit to relooking at the fund in this way. It I think, properly identifies the three major categories of telecommunication services and perhaps a more rational way to divvy up the money so that it targets it for the support in the way that it is intended. Our comments are a lot more detailed than that. You can certainly feel free to look through them. But I think on the whole, the FCC is moving in a generally good direction, but there are some major concerns, and probably the biggest of those concerns would be the reverse auction proposal.
This is important to North Dakota because landline and cellular companies at present in North Dakota receive millions of dollars from what's considered the high-cost fund of the Universal Service Fund. And the FCC is thinking about changing how these companies would receive these monies and how much they might receive. And so this is a very important issue to the companies in North Dakota. As we say in our comments on page 8, to put it simply, there is rural and then there is rural. For the truly rural areas of America, we are not convinced that there may not be thoroughly legitimate need for ongoing mechanisms of support for all services, not just the provider of last resort fund. We want to make sure that they realize that there's, for example, rural Massachusetts and Connecticut, where you have people who live in a somewhat rural area, but they're rather close together. North Dakota and states like Wyoming and Montana, as well as North Dakota, our users of telecommunication services are really spread out. And so it costs a lot of money to serve those people, and we want to make sure that there continues to be federal support for some of those programs to make sure people in North Dakota continue to receive excellent telecommunication services.
I suppose I should note that while we often talk about this in terms of the carriers and the companies or the providers, and they are the ones who directly receive the money, really the folks who are impacted by this are average North Dakotans, because it's this money that allows both new technologies to be put out into North Dakota, but just as importantly allows us to have rates that are roughly comparable to other parts of the country. If you didn't have a universal service program, your monthly phone bills in North Dakota, which are currently very comparable to monthly phone bills for services in other parts of the country, would be exponentially higher. I mean, we're talking about in terms of multiple, two, three, four times as large as they currently are. So it's really a program that's important for consumers.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That concludes the items on our regular agenda today.
You know, maybe while I'm thinking of it, if Tony, would you want to authorize Shar or someone to sign the orders on your behalf?
Yeah, that would be good. Just have Charlene go ahead and sign mine.
You were going to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. And then now at this time, we'll take any questions there are from the media before we break for our signing and then go to our admin agenda.
Just one clarification on the Langan Wind Farm. They're going to be adding 40. They are going to be adding 40 to the 40 they want to buy, correct?
Well, they already have 40, and they're adding 40.
Right, 40 more. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the power line, the issue that peak.
Actually, excuse me, I may not have explained that right.
I think you did.
Otter Tail has 40, but Langdon Wind is adding 40 more. All right? So it'll go from, did you understand that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But there's others there, so the farm itself is larger.
Exactly. It's been 160, but they'll end up with Florida Power and Light will end up owning and having the PCNNs, go ahead, Jerry.
Florida Power and Light doesn't have.
They don't need PCNNs.
Langdon Wind does.
Yeah, Langdon Wind would have the siting certificate for 160 megawatts of the project, and when it's all said and done, and Otter Tail will have the siting certificate for 40 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
And just to clarify, the peak, peak and
yes,
RES.
Their concern boils down to they want to get on a line.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Their project isn't ready to move forward at this time. My understanding is that they want to ensure that when they are ready, they're going to have transmission service for the wind energy that they produce.
And, Dave, I have to say, I have tremendous sympathy for their position. Clearly, we would love to see another 200 megawatts of wind developed in that area or other areas of North Dakota and have the transmission capacity to carry that wind to that wind energy to the marketplace. But a siting case is not the appropriate place to bring a concern or the intervention in this case. A PCNN case may have been. The other problem that you have just in general with it is that their issue is an interconnection agreement to a transmission line, and it's hard to encourage or incent companies to build excess capacity without energy ready to go on that line, because recovery of those costs, you know, is, as we all know, a major issue. So it's a little bit of a clumsy situation, quite honestly, and it's going to take a lot of people in a broad area to work these things out.
Next week is the Big Stone 2 hearing.
Yes, on Monday and Tuesday.
Explain, just so I have it, could you explain what's going to happen?
Sure. The commission will be considering MDU and Otter Tail's proposal to add 500 megawatts now of capacity down at the Big Stone plant in South Dakota. Previously, they had proposed to a larger plant, but two of their participants in that project have withdrawn. So they now are coming to the commission with new materials to show that the new size plant, and it could be 500, it could be 580. It could be 580 if they find additional participants. But their portion of that power would stay the same regardless. They're going to be bringing their arguments to the commission, and we have Of course, we're looking very carefully at this to make sure this is the best resource for Otter Tail and MDU to purchase, to provide electricity to their customers.
And the advanced determination of prudence, if the commission would find that, would mean what?
It would mean that we are giving them our approval that this is a prudent way for them to spend their money, and that they would probably be able, well, that they would be able to recover this in the next rate case.
You know, the whole idea of an advanced determination of prudence, I think that's a perfect description of it myself. An advanced determination of prudence has some merits in a time of high capital costs. As you've heard me say before, regulatory certainty is the friend of investment and uncertainty is the enemy of investment. But at the same time, we don't enter into these types of things lightly. When you're talking about not millions or even hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars being spent, obviously every quarter of a point on the cost of equity or traditional financing is important, but it's nonetheless requires a very thorough review of all of the facts.
And Dave, you were aware that Xcel Energy had filed their North Dakota demand side management proposal with the commission last Friday. Of course, the commission has had a very short time to take a look at this. And in the future, we will have a fact sheet available for the media about this proposal. But just because you were curious, their proposal would, for residential programs for the 2009 budget, they're proposing to spend $460,000, and for commercial programs, $627,000. So the grand total would be approximately $1,087,000 on these programs for 2009. The effect on a residential customer's bill would be approximately 40 cents per month for the residential customer using 805 kilowatt hours of electricity per month. And we know that those are only non-electric heating customers because they use significantly more than that. So that would be, they're proposing about $4.80 a year, or 40 cents a month would go on a separate adder on each person's bill. They're proposing that there would be several programs for residential customers, home lighting, saver switch, home energy audits. For commercial customers, there would be additional programs. They say that if these programs were all implemented in the way that they anticipate that they could be with the savings, that reduced generator demand would mean that they would have, from both commercial and residential programs, about 3 megawatts of savings. So just to give you an idea, the plant over here, the Heskett Station in Mandan, produces about 50 megawatts of electricity a year, all right? And the power plant up north of us produces about 900 megawatts a year.
Coal Creek Station,
all right? And so this, I just want to give people an understanding of, while energy demand-side management is very important these days, it does not substitute for building new power plants.
I think there's also about $1 million cost recovery tariff change as well in here. So I think it collects about a little over $2 million from what I could tell.
Okay. So, but we'll have more details, and of course, we'll be putting out public notice and everything about this proposal. Another thing is that the commission has generally had these types of costs included in a rate case. And in this particular case, this is being submitted as a separate item from the rate case that's already before the commission. And so we'll be taking a look at that issue as well. All right. Okay. Tony, anything before we close the meeting?
Nope. I'll drop off the line, and you guys can just call me back whenever I then get started.
All right. We're going to take 5 minutes, Tony, so it'll be about 10:45. Thank you. Yeah.